We are back. This is Mai Tai Happy Hour. I am with the illustrious, amazing
George.
The greatest human being in the world.
We talked about getting a new song.
I am here with John McGuire.
Hey, everybody.
Are you? Well, you don't love this song. This song is you in
it is
every
not
way.
Me.
Yes, it is. I mean,
no.
when I think
I'm no rat.
When I think it's not rap, it's reggae.
Rat.
I mean,
R-A-T. I'm not a rat.
You want,
I'm not an informer.
You want rat as in like round and round?
That would be ideal.
That would be ideal. That would be weird. Like, I do not think of rat. I do not think of you. Just like when
you've never seen me on a stripper pole before.
Just like. When I think Don Becker, I think Rush.
Yeah,
which
absolutely.
Is why we're so excited to have Don Becker with us on the show today. Welcome to the show, finally, Don Becker.
Gentlemen, it is a pleasure. George, thank you for not dying this past week.
So just to be clear, and one of the reasons why we haven't, our show has been so weird lately, I have been terribly sick for, I don't know, it feels like half a month now.
Oh, easily half a month.
I've had an upper respiratory infection, then my wife had an upper respiratory infection. I spent the last week taking care of the baby the whole time because...
But you had a very nice time taking care of the baby.
The fear was getting the baby sick.
Yeah, I can see that.
We're going to Disney next week, which is why we're doing this weird Saturday episode, because we didn't want to give you 2 weeks with no episode. So there will be no episode this coming week, even though I think this is dropping on Sunday. Regardless, there won't be one in the normal time. And we didn't do one last week because it was just hell after Halloween. I mean, she was sick. Keeping the baby, like, I'm like... We're going to Disney. You can't get sick. Like, I had to give it to my parents. I'm like, here, you will have our baby. This baby is now yours. We can't keep it in the house. I was like, I got to have my baby. I'm like, you're sick. We're dying. Like, we can't have the baby in the house.
Yeah, the 2017 version of Halloween Havoc is Daddy has an upper respiratory infection. Now, Mommy has an upper respiratory infection. Get the baby off to Grandma and Grandpa.
And I don't know if you could tell from the last episode, but I was muting my mic on and off as I was choking through the entire episode. It was a horrible experience.
There was lozenges.
And there was lozenges. There was a lot of that. There was a lot of halls,
mentholiptus. Mount Olympus is where you're from.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's
exactly.
Two different things.
And I bought a humidifier. I don't even know what a humidifier was. They're like, you have humidifier.
Did you get one that's like a little elephant or a penguin?
No.
They have dragon ones.
It has a nightlight. It has
a nightlight. Nice.
It's super, super nice.
That's fun.
Anyway, today we're going to have a great show for you. We are going to be, because we've been storing up this so much. It's like a little boy that hasn't like jerked off in a while. Like, this is our episode where we are just giving it all to you, giving it all. We're going to impregnate you with this episode of Mai Tai Happy Hour. We are going to be talking about, first of all, Hamble's going to talk about the Scorpion, give a little history of the Scorpion this time from Smuggler's Cove, unless you changed it.
No.
No, you're still at the Scorpion.
I got a bookmark out and everything.
Yeah, we got Scorpion Bowl. Then we are going to, we brought Don Becker with us to discuss Nintendo. We, as you know, we spent a long time trying to find our Super Nintendos. Did we talk about when we found them? I think we did talk about
it. No, we were going to talk about it the show we canceled because we got sick.
Okay, so we got our Super Nintendo. We're going to tell about the story. We also since have gotten, Don Becker has gotten Mario Odyssey, which is one of the best Super Mario games I've ever played since Mario 64. And we're going to talk a little bit about Nintendo. We're going to take a little bit of deep dive into video games, which we should do more often. And as one of the unwinnable greats, we feel Don Becker is in the best place to speak to that. We are also... Hambone's going to give us a little inside scoop on Thor. He saw it opening weekend.
Ooh, indeed I did.
Having a baby, I couldn't. I don't know what Don Becker's situation is, or if he even likes Marvel movies. He might be a DC fan, and then I'll hang up on him. And,
you wound me, sir.
Fucking DC. And we are going to talk about Stranger Things 2, which I think Hambone and I have binge-watched, but you know, obviously we were supposed to talk about it last week. Had a little more time to let it marinate. We're going to give our full review of that, and we're also going to talk about meeting Bruce Dickinson this afternoon. Meeting's kind of, that kind of like saying,
yeah, well,
it was like meeting, almost like he glanced at us.
Yeah,
and then if we're lucky,
we it's essentially we passed him in the subway and he signed a book on the way out. Yeah, yeah.
So
we'll get to that later.
And we might talk to Don a little bit about Prague, because Don is the foremost intellectual on Prague music. And as two people here who know nothing about Prague, we feel that you should learn about it, I think.
He's our Prague friend.
He's our Prague friend. Everybody needs a Prague friend.
Everybody needs a Prague friend.
Yes, yes. And that is Don. So why don't you start us off, Hambone? Why don't you tell us a little bit about the Scorpion?
So this recipe comes from the Smuggler's Cove book, which is exceptional. We're going to open it up, and we are going to talk about Steve Crane's riff on Trader Vic's iconic drink. What's cool about it is it brings a better balance and complexity to the famous recipe. Now, Vic invented the idea of the shared bowl with long straws in the 1940s by reviving the dormant punch tradition and marrying it to the traditions of the kava bowl ceremony, which he witnessed in Micronesia. So this recipe is featuring my enemy, gin. However, when blended with all these other ingredients, it actually comes out really good. So this is adapted by Smuggler's Cove. The origin is the luau in 1958. The glassware you're going to want to use is a 32 to 48 ounce scorpion bowl and long 20 ounce luau straws, or another punch bowl or decorative bowl with ladle and cups. Now, this recipe is going to serve four. So this contains 2 ounces of fresh squeezed lime juice, 4 ounces of orange juice, 1.5 ounces of Demerara syrup, which in this Smuggler's Cove book, they tell you how to make it, which is pretty cool. 2 ounces of orgeat, 2 ounces of brandy, 4 ounces of London dry gin, and 4 ounces of blended lightly aged rum. Now, there is no garnish needed for this because the garnish is fire. What you're going to do is combine all ingredients in a mixing tin without ice and roll. And by roll, they mean pouring back and forth. And you're going to do it with another mixing tin to combine ingredients evenly, split it in half. Add ice to each cup and flash blend with the drink mixer for about 3 seconds. You pour the contents of both cups into a 4-person ceramic scorpion bowl. Serve with the 20-inch luau straw so easier sharing. Add fire to taste.
So the Scorpion is a bowl drink, as you just told us. It's we usually see it with like a, you know, either it's actual scorpion bowl or some variation of the scorpion bowl. It's actually, there's a tiki mug, a vessel called the scorpion bowl, and that's what it's served in. And you use very long straws. It's communal. And anyone who knows me knows I despise communal.
Like, you are not a fan of communal.
Me and communal, I don't like to share. I don't like tapas. I don't like anything that's family style. Like,
yeah,
I don't do family style. I don't like to share. I don't like it when, like, you know, the wife will be like, "Oh, like, I'm not hungry. You can get some food. I'll just have a bite of yours." No. No, that's not how it works.
See, I don't mind because the 20-inch straws keep you a safe distance from anybody else.
I'm just, there's something about it. Like, there's still washback with 20-inch straws. Like, it just does not work for me. So I'm not the biggest fan of communal drinks, communal food, sharing, playing nice with others. Like, it just doesn't work right for me.
You, not a fan of playing nice with others? You don't say.
No, doesn't work for me at all. So, but I'm glad you read that to us. That is Smuggler's Cove, one of my favorite bars. It's in San Francisco. It's designed to look like a pirate ship. It's tall. There's like an upper level at the masthead, and you kind of go down through the ship into the basement where there's a waterfall, and it's a really spectacular
bar. Don't go chasing those waterfalls in the basement.
Oh, bad.
Of Smuggler's Cove.
Bad, bad TL.
What? Who? Me?
So we just got back. I'm a little bit tired. We're exhausted. We just went to an autograph signing with Bruce Dickinson of Iron Maiden.
Yes.
Iron Maiden, my favorite band of all time, next to Bad Religion.
You mean next to the Offspring?
You are a piece of garbage. I hate you. I don't understand. First of all, I don't understand what your problem is with the Offspring. Second of all,
oh,
fuck you. But Iron Maiden, one of my favorite bands. The one time I got to get autographs from Iron Maiden, I think we've talked about this before, but I got them to sign a 3D poster of Future Real, the album with Blaze Bailey. So it's autographed by every member of the band except for Adrian Smith and Bruce Dickinson, with Blaze Bailey autographed. I think it's actually more rare.
I think that's got to be super rare.
I got Yannick's autograph on there, so it is what it is. But today we got Bruce Dickinson's book. We did not get an advance copy because we're Mai Tai happy hour.
Exactly.
So I can't really tell you about the book, even though, little known secret, he is an accomplished children's writer.
I did not know
and
that.
And has released numerous children's books that I don't believe they're Iron Maiden books. I believe they're just children's books.
Because, I couldn't imagine Eddie playing nice.
Did you know that, Don?
I did not know that.
Yeah, so along with being a pilot, a tank enthusiast slash historian, a frontman for the greatest metal band of all time.
All time.
He is also a children's writer. And it looks like there's no ghostwriter on this, so it seems like he actually wrote it.
Yeah.
And our friend Carlos just told us that he actually voices the audiobook version, too, on Audible.
Well, that's going
to
be awesome.
And he has fun with it. So I'm going to have to get the Audible version and this, and just that's the way I'm going to roll.
Take it from there.
So talk to us a little bit about meeting Bruce Dickinson.
So Bookends is a store in northern New Jersey in Ridgewood. They've been doing book signings since they've opened up, and they always get a lot of great authors. They also get a lot of celebrities going there. Many years ago when The Rock came out with his first book, I drove my brother there because he was much younger, and my brother got to meet The Rock and get the book signed. I recently went there and met Bruce Campbell and had an amazing experience with Bruce Campbell, and you could check that show out. It's in our archives where I talk about that. This bookstore is pretty cool. They line you up outside in the parking lot in a queue. You're surrounded by a bunch of other metalheads who are there to meet Bruce Dickinson. The whole line smelled like clove cigarettes and regret, and that's being nice. And you just kind of wait for them to open the doors and load you into another queue downstairs. Now, depending on the writer, depending on the celebrity, depends on the limit to the interaction that you're going to get with that writer or celebrity.
Yeah, so I think I mentioned last time, when we went and saw Bruce Campbell, when I saw him years ago, when he released his first book, where is it up there? I forgot what it's called. I don't see it on my shelf. But when we met him, he did a full Q&A.
Yeah.
And talked to everybody and, especially signed all the books. When I met Hulk Hogan, it was more of a, hey, brother, take your vitamins. Don't say the N-word, and move along. Move along. But Bruce Dickinson, not quite the same experience.
Not quite the same experience. They got us down there in the queue. Now, when I met Bruce Campbell, they said on their website no photographs were allowed. However, what they did was you could hand your phone or camera off to a woman who stood in line and would take pictures of you meeting Bruce Campbell. In this instance, they had it set up so at no angle could you actually take a picture of you standing next to Bruce Dickinson. You had to get creative.
There was literally a bodyguard to the left of him,
right?
His publicist to the right of him, some Bookends guy taking your book, blocking his side, and then another woman on the other side giving the book back to you.
Yeah.
That was it. And he wouldn't switch his pen. He was signing right and shaking left.
If you wanted to get a picture of Bruce Dickinson, which one of our friends, Carlos, actually got a great picture of the back of me, which I'm unmistakable because of my sweet haircut and my awesome denim jacket, meeting Bruce Dickinson, he got a shot in there from hard right. Now, Bruce would come in and was sitting there the entire time, and he was signing fast. However, he was shaking with his left hand. Now, most people, when you shake someone's hand, you shake with your right hand to their right hand, and then you're not really expecting to shake right hand to left hand, so people are getting...
It's awkward. It's awkward.
So awkward.
It's
However, awkward weird. I kept seeing people from a distance doing this, and I'm like, oh, this is easy. I'll just shake his hand with my left hand. So I gave Bruce Dickinson a good hearty handshake, left hand, and I said, hey, man, thanks a lot. Cheers. And when you tell an English person cheers, almost like a compulsion, they go, oh, yeah, cheers, mate. So I got a cheers made out of Bruce Dickinson. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, I shook his hand. I did the awkward left hand, like the kind of like sideways, like
yeah,
it's like you go do the double chicken wings.
Yeah, double chicken wings.
It was really strange, but he's writing the signatures really fast. I think he like overshot his, so he had to like go correct his signature. So he laughed at for a second, and it made me smile.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That was about as good as it was getting.
That's about as good as it was going to get.
And then, Don, afterwards, we were actually the tools that waited. So we parked right behind the place. Hambone actually got a great parking spot.
I got rockstar parking for Bookends.
And we went to the pancake house down there, which is like the best pancake house in the world. It's these giant pancakes the size of like your chest.
Yeah, full chest-sized pancakes.
Full chest-sized pancakes. And we ate, and then we came back, and we noticed that there was a growing line of people, a bunch of people outside, to realize, oh, they're waiting for him to come out so they can do something. And we then waited for a half hour.
It was like 20 minutes.
20 minutes
or
so. And
it was a very nice day, so it wasn't obtrusive.
But it was really like, the security comes out, he waves nicely right to the car, out the door.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yep. And there was definitely some real winners out there being
obnoxious.
Oh,
there were such douchebags.
Douchebags.
There were some morons in that crowd that I was just like, I'm embarrassed that you are also an Iron Maiden fan.
Yeah, kind
of. Have you ever met any of the members of Iron Maiden, Don?
I have not, no. But Bruce was in town about a week ago. So same book tour.
Are you going to pick up the book?
Probably.
Yeah, I'll let you know if the audiobook's better. Or I don't know. I usually read on Kindle. It's weird. I don't buy hardbacks too often.
Yeah, I have one hardcover book that I've been meaning to read. It's on my nightstand. However, most things I do, because I travel a lot, I listen on Audible. I'm looking forward to the Bruce Dickinson book on Audible, because I imagine it's going to be a lot more entertaining hearing it read in his voice.
Yeah, the British accent just, you know.
Yeah, of course.
It makes you very, you know, you get very excited.
Brick is back.
Yeah, you feel more immersed in the story at that point when you're hearing it in his voice.
Yeah, of course.
What you missed there, Don, since you can't hear the drops, is I played the Break His Back, Make Him Humble, Iron Sheik drop. And when you talked over it, it was really weird.
I didn't realize that was a real thing, Don, until recently, and now I know, and I hear it all the time.
You seriously didn't know that was a thing?
Oh, you know what? I've heard him like freak out on so many people on Twitter and like in different interviews, but no, I'd never heard that one.
This is the original one. This is like the B. Brian Blair one. It's amazing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but that's the thing about the Sheik freaking out, is it's always the same thing. It's always the break your back, fuck you in the ass, make you humble.
Yeah, he's strayed away from the really, really homophobic stuff, because a lot of this was laced with pretty, pretty, pretty bad things.
Pretty bad stuff.
And he was probably on a lot of drugs when he did these. But then Howard Stern got a kick out of it and kept bringing him back as like comedy relief. And that's how the modern Iron Sheik kind of like was created, was because of this. So we're going to talk a little bit about Nintendo right now. Nintendo is, when I was a child, for Christmas, I got a used Atari computer system. It was like, I think it's the precursor to the 2600. It was a big wooden type Atari, well after it was popular. But that was my first system. And I played it. Look, I loved it. I was playing it for a while. But there's something about Atari which just like predates me, and it's, no story. Pitfall, I think, was the only game.
Pitfall 2 best.
Was maybe the only game that had any story. So I got tired of Atari pretty quickly. And then my father bought me the Nintendo Entertainment System. Took me to the, I think it was Consumers. It was somewhere where it was like kind of like a catalog store where you go there, pick something in the catalog, and it comes out the back. And I
miss those days.
Yeah. I think they still, I don't know if they still exist or not, but
I think there's a service merchandise somewhere that still does the whole thing.
Service merchandise.
Yes, that's what we had in New Jersey.
Consumers. I can't believe it. I mean, what a horrible name for a store.
Consumers.
You're the consumer. Like, buy in our catalog that gets delivered on a conveyor belt to you. But we got, I'd gotten the multi-pack with Kung Fu, Super Mario, and they had two controllers. It wasn't like the fancy one with Duck Hunt. That was like the one next one. And I fell in love with Nintendo, but it was Super Nintendo that really made me fall in love with gaming, because the stories were truly next level between Super Mario World, Zelda Link to the Past, and the final great one, the Super Mario RPG, which later became Paper Mario. So,
I remember that.
Yeah.
So I just started playing that Super Mario RPG.
And I have, and I think we've talked about it, I have three Super Nintendos in my attic and a million games, but if you try to hook it up to a 1080p TV or a 4K TV,
nope,
it looks like hot garbage, like just complete.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Any of the old ones. I have I bought an Intellivision 2 when I'd gone to, crap, was that the Digital Press?
Yes.
And it's same thing. It's like I have it hooked up to like the just to channel three, like you always used to do. And I still have a tube TV and it still looked OK. But the second I hooked up to a flat screen, yeah, it hot garbage.
If I had a CRT, I probably wouldn't have even thought about getting like a 19 inch for this room. But there just isn't room in here for even a 19 inch CRT.
Well, yeah, but a 19 inch CRT is still pretty friggin'
big. It's huge. It's like almost size this iMac. And I just, yeah, just don't have space for it. But I'd love to play it. One of the things we had planned for around now was I wanted to do, I've been slowly buying the old N64 wrestling games.
Yep.
I bought WrestleMania, No Mercy, and the NWO versus WCW and ECW. But then I popped it in. Even the N64 looks like garbage. And I hook it up with the audio video and the S video cables. That's as good it's going to get. So we got, and we're eventually going to do that episode. I think we got to play it a little bit. I think we got to get Don Becker over one day, and we all got to have an afternoon of playing bad N64 wrestling. Maybe we'll find a CRT just for the day
just
to play
that.
And maybe put it in the basement where we're not using it.
Yeah, cut on a red, white, or blue. $40.
So when we heard about the Super Nintendo coming out, we realized, like, and they're upconverting 30 of the best games for HDMI. We needed to get it.
Absolutely.
And I got to give huge props to my team at Verizon, Andrew and Albert, Aiden, for helping me hunt it down. We stalked for days while getting ready for the Pixel launch, and we pulled it off. We were able to find out what day they were dropping. Not after they launched. There was a secondary drop ship, and we knew Targets had them, and we knew which ones had them, and we just started hunting. I found it in Paramus, gave Hambone the heads up that there was two left, ran up, and he got one too.
I gunned it there from Passaic to Hackensack, 20 minutes flat.
And how happy are you right now?
I'm super happy. I got in there. They already had it bagged. I got up to the counter, and I looked at the gal, and I didn't even have to open my mouth. She just lifted up a bag with a little SNES in it.
Yeah. So for those who don't have one yet, they're tiny. Yeah, like, great. It's not even like... It is maybe a third of the size of the original Super Nintendo. It's the controller... My one complaint, very small complaint, but the controllers are too short. So you either need a long HDMI cable or you need to find a way to jury-rig the cables.
So how I have mine hooked up, I have a 20, 30-foot HDMI cable. So I run it from my TV, I run the cable under my bed, and I plug the Super Nintendo in on my nightstand next to my bed, and so that the controllers are perfect length.
That makes perfect sense.
Maximum comfort.
But the way my room is, I'd have to run an HDMI cable around the room in the sun parlor. Don, what are your thoughts on Super Nintendo? What were you're a little bit older than us. Do you have more memories of it than we do?
Torch.
Yeah, I was definitely more of an NES kid growing up. I remember I'd gone on a school trip for a week, and then I came back, and it was right around my birthday, and the Nintendo was already hooked up in my room. And I found out the reason that was already hooked up was not because like my parents wanted me to like start playing right away. It was because my mom had been playing it the whole week I was gone. So I was definitely more of an NES guy than an SNES guy. By the time the Super Nintendo came out, I had moved on to Sega Genesis. But I ended up working my way back through Super Nintendo because my mom got a Super Nintendo because she wanted to play Mario.
That's awesome. My mom would never have even known what Nintendo was. That's crazy.
Oh, my mom was a gamer mom. I remember writing an article on Unwinnable. I think I'd written it probably right around what would have been her 75th birthday. And it was the whole thing, just like from sitting there with the old Intellivision, that giant wood panel beast, playing Astro Smash and Lock and Chase with her, all the way up to buying her a GameCube, because her birthday and Christmas were within a week of each other. So I would just combine both and give her the big gift. And I got her a GameCube and Super Mario Sunshine maybe like a year before she passed away. And that was basically like the carrot to get me to come over, was like, hey, I'm stuck on this level. You want to come over and have dinner? I'm like, well,
that's awesome.
I'll come over and have dinner and get you past this level. So
that's fantastic. And she was obviously older too. So it wasn't like, she was not just a gamer mom, but she was also like, you know, she carried that torch well into her prime, which is awesome.
Yeah, I think I really feel like playing video games, like, you know, kept her like mentally sharp.
Yeah.
Just like, and, you know, I mean, physical reflexes, maybe not so much, but at least just like the puzzle solving and things like that. Not everybody is lucky enough that, you know, that their parents maintain their faculties through their life. So I was very lucky in that regard. And I think especially with my mom, I think the video games helped.
I took a break. I think after Nintendo, My friends all had Master Genesis, the Master System. So I would go there. And NHL, that was their thing. I would go there, play Road Rash. Go over Chris, Greg Gethard, to hang out with Chris Gethard, play Road Rash till the wee hours of the morning.
I loved Road Rash.
Road Rash 2, NBA Jams was amazing. But I never had, for some reason, I never got a Master System. Maybe because, I don't know why, I never got a Super Nintendo either. I would play, all my friends had them. So I would just go over their houses after school and play it there. The N64 blew my mind when I was a senior in high school. I think it came out like 94, 95, 96. And I remember seeing Super Mario 64. It was one of the first systems I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
This is next gen. And I, it wasn't, I don't know when I bought mine, but when I met Allison, Allison was a hardcore gamer. So Allison had a Super Nintendo, Mortal Kombat, Super Street Fighter. She linked to the past. She played hard and she played a lot when I started dating her in like 97. So my friend Jeff was working at KB and I guess they had a demo Super Nintendo. He unplugged it, gave it to me. I started playing her games, my games. And I started falling in love with that. I think on N64, I don't know when the N64, I don't remember when I bought it, but that's when I branched out to PlayStation 2 and PlayStation 3 and kept going. But the Nintendo, the characters still, like, I can say I love PlayStation 2, but I can't tell you a game. Like, the games that still sync with me, the true, like, I can say GoldenEye, I can say Mario, I can say Zelda. Yes, we just reminisce on NHL and Road Rash, but there's not much else I really remember from other systems. Nintendo truly built these characters and these stories that blew my mind.
I mean, I can't speak for anyone else, but I will tell you, for video games, I remember all the original Nintendo characters, King Icarus, you know, Samus Aras. You remember the late area Nintendo characters, and then you also remember things like Sonic the Hedgehog, Solid Snake.
Yeah, I'll give you right? Sonic. Give you Sonic.
Well, 'cause Sonic is not as iconic, but Sonic's pretty iconic. No,
Sonic is. Sonic's iconic.
But that's about it. Like, it's, you know, everyone knows who Mario is.
And just so you know, you do know, I hate things and love things. And there's no in-between. There's no gray area for George. Like, I hate DC Comics.
Passionately.
Love Marvel.
Yeah, you do.
I hated Sega Master System. I loved Nintendo.
Right.
PlayStation was weird. That was a gray area. I didn't like Xbox. Love PlayStation.
Right.
Well, Xbox fucked me, so that's different, too.
Xbox
too many red
me many
rings.
Times.
But, you know, there's always like a heart. But Nintendo's just holds something really true to my heart. Are there any games that you really love, Don?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Definitely the first two Zeldas. I think I may be the only person that actually liked
Zelda 2, the side scroller.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the first Zelda game I played.
Mm-hmm.
Strangely enough, like, that's the one that got me hooked. And then I went back and played the original Zelda and ended up loving that. Mario 3 and Super Mario World. I mean, as long as we're still talking in that Nintendo thing.
And we're largely talking Nintendo, so yeah.
Yeah, Dragon Warrior. I remember when I first got Dragon Warrior.
It came for free with the first issue of Nintendo Power, if you subscribe to it.
See, I actually bought it. I didn't actually have the subscription to Nintendo Power. I just bought it because I was like, oh, it's like Dungeons & Dragons. This should be fun. And I literally played it every day after school for like 4 hours and finished the game in 3 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. Then Final Fantasy 3 or Final Fantasy 1, which I think was Final Fantasy 3, but I always get that confused.
Yeah, I get that confused.
I think the numberings were still different in America versus here and there. Super Mario RPG was the first RPG that just sucked me in. That, again, was one of the last Nintendo Super Nintendo games made. I think it may have been the last one. I was working at the RX place, and I stole the copy as they were going out of business and played the hell out of that game. So I'm really excited. And now that you have Super Nintendo, please play that game if you've never played it before.
I started playing it. I momentarily abandoned it because I wanted to play Zelda.
And it really will suck you in.
Do you actually get to build an adventuring party in RPG?
Yes,
it's not just Mario, it's traditional. Yeah, I'll definitely play it then. I'm in the very beginning stages of A Link to the Past, which I love. I never really got to fully play and enjoy it as a kid. So now I'm kind of like, oh, this is my adult game.
The other thing about Super Mario RPG, that first one was made by Square and the Final Fantasy team. So know that you're at that caliber of quality control.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the first world. I'm just waiting to start building an adventuring party. Like, I think I have Toad with me now. But, yeah, I mean, if I could build a full adventuring party of Mario characters, that's going to be super cool.
So I know I highly recommend anyone, if you can get the Super Nintendo, if you love the Super Nintendo, try to find the Super Nintendo Classic. It's like $80. It's worth every cent.
I agree.
It's not the easiest thing to get, but if you keep an eye on some of those stock informer sites, when they drop, go to the stores. The moment you hear about it, just go to the store. Don't call because they're sick of it. GameStop's also useless. Forget Newegg. The bait and switch they did where they said, "Oh, we're drop not Newegg,
ThinkGeek.
We're like, we're gonna drop a shipment today. Make sure you sign up for our Twitter and our newsletter and everything. We'll tell you when it drops." And I'm like, "Whoa, this was a giant gimmick to get everyone to sign up for their shit, and then the site crashed."
It was like getting engaged to be engaged.
The moment you see they're available, just go to Target. And go hit a few targets, you'll find it. It's definitely worth it.
And I got a 2 sweet from the counter girl.
The one thing we didn't talk about, because I think we were moving from TV to audio, was the Switch, when the Switch came out.
Right.
I bought the Switch because I knew I was having a child, and I wanted an easy way to play video games while sitting, waiting for my kid to fall asleep, or just, it's easier to just grab it and play. And I also like the fact that you move easily, seamlessly from console to audio, to the handheld.
Right.
And I bought it. It took me a little while to get that, too. I was using the stock sites for that. It turned out Amazon did a Prime Day, like a secret Prime Day. Like, if you're a Prime member, we've got Switches. Only for Prime members.
Awesome.
And it lasted...
That's how I got mine.
Yep. Lasted, like, about an hour, 2 hours. Grabbed mine at regular price. And it was... I got it with Zelda, which up till now has been the only game that's really been worth anything. I was actually kind of getting a little, like, come on, we need something...
Because all Nintendo does is release one game in like family party games when the first comes
out. Exactly, which is why I did not get the I knew the Wii was going to be a kid's thing.
Because I think Nintendo's allergic to money. Because why not release two, maybe three flagship style games when you come out?
So let's get to that. Let's skip a little bit over before we get to Mario Odyssey, because they're going to make money with that. But Nintendo has just sucked for the last decade, since the Wii came out.
They're allergic to money.
The thing is, and I've read about this a lot since I work in the mobile industry, is that they were afraid of bastardizing their intellectual property by releasing, and their Game Boy properties, by releasing their characters as mobile games.
Stupid.
And so they held back on doing like a Super Mario port for mobile, which they could have easily sold a million copies of that.
Well, so Super Mario Run wasn't like an actual Mario port.
They only did that because Pokemon. So everybody thought they had the Pokemon property, even the stock market. Pokemon dropped. The stock went through the roof, and it turns out they don't even own that. They didn't even make that game, and they got very little. They got a license fee for that, and then they finally realized, oh, we fucked up. And released Mario's Run, which sucked.
It sucked. Honest to God, if they were like, hey, we're going to re-release Super Mario Brothers in the App Store for $1, they would make money.
They could have done $9.99 and made all the money.
They could have made all the money. I mean, because people will play Super Mario Brothers on their phone.
Don, what are your thoughts?
I agree with you. I think they gambled a bit with Super Mario Run. And I remember like when it first came out, I think they were saying that they were going to charge like $10 for it. And I'm like, you're basically giving people Temple Run, and the controls weren't as good. And
terrible.
Yeah. It's like, that's a game that you price at like $2, and you might get some people to buy it, and then they've got everything that they need. I do like the fact that with Mario Run, they weren't going like, you know, whole hog on microtransactions, because that's the thing that pisses me off most about modern games.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I don't know. Nintendo definitely hit gold with the Switch.
Absolutely, yeah.
Then screwed up with the Nintendo Classic, which they just had no product for, and then killed it after the holidays.
Yeah, that's...
And I honestly don't think that was... I really don't think they did that on purpose. I know a lot of people were like, oh, well... excuse me. A lot of people were like, well, they did that to just create buzz, you know, get people hot. But no, if you do that, you eventually release more product. Like the iPhone X, this thing right here, like this sold out yesterday.
Right.
By noon, everybody was sold out of this. Everybody got one. Apple's going to have more in like 2 weeks. You're eventually going to be able to get an Apple X. You could not get an NES Classic anywhere, ever, to this day.
No.
It's gone.
I sure tried.
Not for less than $150.
And then they announced that they were just killing the system. And then they backpedaled and they just said, oh, we're going to release more in 2018. And they said, don't worry, we're going to have more stock of Super Nintendo, which they have proven that the stock's a little easier to find on this. They said, don't buy it. aftermarket for twice the price, you'll eventually get one. But again, like, why are they screwing up so bad?
Yeah, I don't get it.
Me either.
But last week, Mario Odyssey came out. The moment I got the Switch, I pre-ordered like a million games, because you can like pre-order and not pay until they come out on Amazon.
That's cool.
And you get like 18%, 20% off. There's a big discount for if you pre-order. It showed up, and I have not been more happy. After the show's over, I will let you touch it, Hambone.
Thank you.
But it is this. It starts off very Super Mario 64. It's got the essence of Super Mario 64, but it very quickly can transition. You can go down a pipe, and it turns 2D.
That's awesome.
Side scroller, and then seamlessly turns 3D again. And the way it plays, the ergonomics, the controls, the story is great. It's the, you know, it's the rescue the princess from Bowser. Right. I'm expecting a plot twist, and she actually is like in love with him or something.
Oh, that'd be sick.
Because right now it's a little too formulaic, and I know Nintendo sometimes breaks from it, like in Ocarina of Time, where Zelda turned out to be the badass ninja that didn't need saving. Yeah. She saved Link. I'm hoping this is a case where like it's Romeo and Juliet, but yeah. I doubt it. Don, what are your early thoughts on the game?
Yeah, I'm only about like one or two levels in, and I'm enjoying the hell out of it. I had the Wii, so I played Super Mario Galaxy. I thought it was okay. I played Super Mario Sunshine, didn't like it. I really wanted something that played more like Mario 64, and this I feel like is the closest they've come to that since 64.
How do you think the Switch fits with it? Like, how are you enjoying the Switch?
I enjoy it. I mean, I don't have a lot of games. Like, I think I have, I bought it with Mario Kart. I didn't buy it with Zelda because I just knew that I wasn't going to have the time to immerse myself into a game like Zelda.
And Zelda is, I got to admit, I slowed down because it is extremely immersive.
Yeah. But what I've been doing is I actually ended up buying a bunch of like those like smaller like indie type games from the eShop. I played played the hell out of Shadow Knight. I'm playing Golf Story. Golf Story is a lot of fun.
What is Golf Story?
It's a golf RPG, basically.
The
controls are really simple. It's, I think, like $15. Yeah, you're going to go through it in about like 2-3 weeks. But the story is kind of cute, and and it has that retro, 16-bit feel to it in terms of looks. And it's not like a hardcore golf game. It's definitely not for somebody that, follows the tour.
Okay, I have I've been collecting the Metal Slugs. I'm a huge old Metal Slug fan, and they're available on there for like $5.
Isn't it funny that with all this new technology, all people want is to go back and play 8 and 16-bit games?
I like the mixture. I mean, I like the ability to play it where it looks nice. What I like about the Switch is the usability. So you can play it docked on your TV. Right. And it's 1080p on there. Absolutely gorgeous. You can handhold it 720p. It's pretty good, but your hands, it's heavy, so it's hard to lie down and play it.
It's a tablet.
But one really cool thing is they put a kickstand in the back of the Switch. You don't need to have, it comes with a dock where you put the two sliding handheld things into a dock that makes it a controller, kind of like an N64 controller. Right. But you don't need that. Yeah. You can put these side plates and just lie back like this and play spread eagle with your arms spread eagle. Like, you could just like relax, but you can also just put the kickstand on your desk or your nightstand and just play like that too. And it just, there's so many options for how you can play it.
Yeah.
And for adults, that's great.
That's right.
Like, you don't need to just be attached to wherever you are. It is the perfect, it's what I think the Wii U tried to be, but failed to be.
Right.
And Mario, I think Mario's the game that's going to do it. I know Skyrim's coming out soon, and I never beat Skyrim.
They're actually getting Skyrim for the...
I never beat it for 360, so I think this is the time I'm going to get it and go through it. And also pre-ordered the upcoming... Is it... blanking right now. Is it Metroid? There's something else coming down the pike. I don't know. I wanted 2K18, and then that started getting dumb and never... Yeah, I don't know. I don't even want to talk about EA and whatever they're doing. They're stupid shit with Amazon where they won't sell the real titles and the physical titles. I don't know. I'm frustrated a little bit there. But I think Nintendo's got a chance right now. I think this is their moment, and they need to take it, and they need to move forward.
Take it, it's yours!
Because I'm not buying that new Xbox.
No, I'm completely pleased with Punch at my PlayStation 4 Pro. I just saw the new ads. I'm sorry, the new trailer for Last of Us 2.
Oh.
And that's when you lose me for like a solid week and a half.
When's that coming out?
Off the top of my head, I don't know.
Oh my god!
I think it's next year.
That is going to be the game that ends my... That's going to be like Fallout 4.
Yeah.
But it's going to be better because the storyline's going to be amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you played Last of Us, Don?
No, I don't have a PlayStation anymore.
Oh, we got to make that happen somehow. That is the greatest game ever made. I think it was the best storylines. I'd put that in Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fallout 3, just some of the best stories I've ever seen. I need stories. I need to be engaged.
Yeah.
For me, it's the journey, not the ending. Like, I want the whole journey to be amazing. And the ending can just be an ending. And that's the way I love to play video games.
Agreed.
So, Don, we need to know, why haven't you seen... Have you never seen Stranger Things?
I have never seen Stranger Things.
Really?
Do you not have Netflix?
No, I do have Netflix. I think what it is I feel like it's the kind of show that my wife would love.
Oh, my God.
But her work schedule historically has always been kind of weird. So I don't want to start it without her. But I also get the sense that by the time her work schedule sorts itself out, it's going to be like Christmas. And I'm like, do I really want to start watching Stranger Things now? Or do I want to wait till like next Halloween and binge like up to season 3?
I feel Stranger Things was made for you, Don Becker. Like, it is everything that's great about the 80s.
Yep.
And sci-fi. And it's horror without being scary. It's the greatest. It's a love letter to the 80s.
Which definitely sounds like it's right up my alley. And everybody I know who's seen it loved it. And I do, like, I feel like eventually I'm probably just going to bite the bullet and just start watching it, you know, without my wife and just deal with it.
And Stu, who, like, when he started bad-mouthing it on Twitter, Stranger Things 2, and I was like, oh, I want to punch you in the face, at the end, apologized.
He totally was like, fine, it's good.
It was really good.
Fine, it's good.
So yeah, the thing you got to remember about Stu is Stu hates everything.
Yeah, I know. Stranger Things 2, so we're going to try to do the spoiler-free a little bit.
I don't care if you spoil it.
No, but just for everybody else, because it's only been out for about a week. Stranger Things 2, I thought Stranger Things was perfect.
Note for
note. Did not need to have a sequel. It ended, it tied up everything perfectly. It was something where I couldn't fathom how they could do a sequel. And they found a way to do it without seeming shoehorned. And continue the story, and since we now know who these characters are, not have to delve too much into that, not as much of an origin story, just get to the true crux of it. And they did a great job making us care for what's basically the same story again, but in a different, like, way of showing it.
Yes.
Right? I mean, technically it's the same story twice, but done a little better effects. And I felt the acting was really great. Go ahead, Ambo.
The story is very, like, this is the one loose end, but it ends up being, instead of, like, a small thread, a big, big problem. And that's what I did enjoy about it. I kind of love sequels, because if you really like a character, or in this case, an ensemble cast of characters, you actually get to see character development rather than what we're going to try to dump on you because we have a very limited time in the first part. So I thought this was pretty cool. I think Steve is the best character on the show, hands down. Like, as you watch it, as if you've not already watched it, you are going to be absolutely, like, stoked on Steve.
So to be clear, and for those who haven't seen, Steve is the traditional douchebag character that is in every 80s movie. The one who's got the hot chick, the one who loses the hot chick.
He's got the great hair.
He's got the car. He's not the bully. He's the one who drives Dad's BMW, who wears the suit jacket, the sports coat.
Members only.
In high school, over the polo shirt. He's that guy in the movie, in the 80s movie.
He's the one that you know is going to die in the movies. And I think it's safe to talk about spoilers, Stranger Things, season 1. He doesn't, and he ends up being like a total badass hero. And you're like, wow, I didn't see that coming. Yeah,
they pulled the switch on him and made him a cool monster hunter. Love it. Love the way they did it. I love the special effects, the way they brought the big bad back without making it be like another portal to another dimension.
Yeah, I thought that was great.
It was really interesting how they did it. The I love how the character who's barely in the first season, because he's the one who's disappeared, the guy from much like the guy from The Hangover, who they're trying to find, he's actually in The Hangover.
Yeah, he's actually in this one.
Yeah, he's in it, but they make him have PTSD pretty much, because that makes sense. If you're kidnapped and put in an alternate dimension being raped by weird
tentacle monsters,
you're probably gonna have some really heavy shit.
Yeah,
and
you might be sleeping with the lights on for a while.
I love how they go. The plot thing, the things I didn't love, I thought Eleven was done a little weird. I think people love Eleven, and I think don't know. I get what they did. I get the fact that she was like, oh, it's a 12-year-old girl who's like going through, you know, she's a bitchy little teenage girl. Like,
right.
But I just thought they could have been a little more of her, just in general, just more of her. I think they, until the very end where they have that weird episode 7 that most people hate, but I liked.
See, I enjoyed it. Her version of the Dark Phoenix.
Yeah, it was basically her version of the Dark Phoenix.
And you know what? I mean, I see it the other way. I actually appreciate the fact that I think she played the role she was supposed to play in season 2. And she actually had a journey for her character. I mean, it's crazy. They're balancing out with like 9 different characters and their stories.
Yeah, and it's really well done. I also think that they need to explain maybe the 3rd season what the hell the bad thing is. They've never really explained what the hell this all is.
Well, they come a little closer for it in season 2. That being said, you're right. They don't actually come out and say exactly what it is. And
they call it the Upside Down, which is like the dying corpse alien monster version of our world.
Right.
But not quite sure if it's like a parallel universe or lives underneath the ground. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But I would like to say that overall the story is great, the acting is great, the character is great. I recommend it to anybody who's seen the 1st season. Yes, you have to see the 1st season to understand.
You really do. Yeah, you're completely lost if you don't.
So Don Becker, you need to go watch it.
And season 3 is 2019.
Really?
Halloween 2019.
Oh, not 2018? Really?
Yeah.
That sucks. That's like Game of Thrones shit right there.
It is Game of Thrones shit right there, but that's what happens when you're the biggest show on TV.
No, that's not what happens.
No, that's exactly what happens.
They got to negotiate new contracts.
And
they got
that's what happens when you're the biggest show on TV.
Yeah. Speaking of the biggest show on TV that's not on TV, Marvel, Thor, Ragnarok.
Oh my God, it was so good.
When I heard Ragnarok, the only thing I thought of was, and Don would probably appreciate this, was Gwar's Ragnarok a roll, rock a rock a roll. Yep. Is the song in there?
No, that song is not in there.
Because that's all I think of with Ragnarok.
So I'm trying to think, the best way I could give a spoiler free a review of Ragnarok is that if you were a fan of Walt Simonson's Thor growing up, this is your Thor.
Is Frog Thor in this? Beta Ray Bill in this?
I will not say anything.
Fuck yes, Beta Ray Bill is in it.
I didn't say that. I did not say that. You just got to see the movie. There is a very, very, very different version of Thor than you might be seeing, because Thor is a doof. Thor is a doofy adventurer. He's very excited. I don't know if you've ever seen, well, you would not have, George, Batman Brave and the Bold cartoon where they had Aquaman.
No, I mean, obviously, it's DC.
He was like, yes, we're going on an adventure! And that's Thor in this movie. That being said, the movie is super fun. It's super funny. When it's supposed to be serious and supposed to be like, there are stakes involved, you will see stakes involved. You will see like, oh, the stakes are high. We got to get the job done now. There are some really great cameos in it. There is a lot of reference to Walt Simonson's Thor. The guy who made it made What We Do in the Shadows, and it's a similar kind of comedy where it's not, it's almost
awkward
like,
and British.
Well, it's kind of awkward and British at times. That being said, everyone falls into place where they're supposed to fall into place with it. Mark Mothersbaugh does the music, so the music is top notch. And I don't really want to say anything else because I don't want to spoil it for anyone. Oh, you know what I will say? For the first time, the trailer did not fully give away the entire movie.
Okay, I'll take that. I'll take that.
Which is, I watch the movie, and I always think about the trailer after I see a movie and think, did I actually already see this movie? And most times I will say yes. However, Thor Ragnarok, the trailer did not give the movie away.
Any interest at all in seeing this, Don?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was actually very offended that you thought I might be a DC guy, by the way.
I don't know. You remind me of a DC guy.
George!
Actually, might be a DC guy.
Look, I mean, I go see the DC movies, but I just happen to like going to see action movies, so I'm fine with
it. I'll give you that. I'll give you that. Have you seen the other two Thors? What are your thoughts on Thor?
I think so far, I feel like it's a very underrated part of the MCU. I feel like people kind of like rat crap on the first two movies, especially the second one. And I thought the second one was pretty good.
I the first movie, so I'm not a Thor fan. Let's get this straight. I did like the Walt Simonson era Thor, which I think ran through Mutant Massacre, which is how I picked up on it, because I had to get the crossover and they hooked me.
Right.
I did not like the first, but Thor in general is not a character really interests me. I'm, you know, as a Greek, I prefer the gods, the Hellenic gods
Hercules.
Of Mount Olympus, not the Asgardian, Norwegian, Nordic gods of Asgard.
You're a Greek mythology guy, not a Norse.
Yeah, I mean, it's the way it is. I mean, just,
we get that.
Yeah, so I've never really been a huge Thor fan. And the first movie I thought was okay. What I did like about the first Thor movie was the few little instances where he would say things like, oh my God, it's like he would just, he's a guy who's like, yeah, dumb jock who just ends up on Earth who knows, doesn't know anything it is. And he's like, oh my God, it's a cheeseburger. What's a cheese? Oh my God, beer. I can drink 20 of these. And gets really drunk and he's sorry. And there was a few moments of that comedy. You know, this is a god on Earth. And it sounds like this movie really
brings the Thor character out. He's not just, I am like a mighty god. He's a doof. Thor is a friggin' doof.
But I really, really liked the second movie that nobody else liked. I thought it did a great job with Loki, who's an amazing villain. I thought the big bad was great. I thought they played up the humor a little bit. I don't know why everybody hated the second movie.
I enjoyed the second movie.
Yeah, me too.
So you know in the second movie how it got darker at times?
Yeah, it did get darker.
And there was the gravitas. Well, you get that in this movie, along with Thor being a complete goober.
Where does it fit into the grand scheme of the Marvel story? Does it fit into it?
It does. It does actually fit into it. This happens after Civil War, and this is the lead in to Infinity War.
Okay, so this ties directly in.
Yeah.
I'm excited. If it wasn't for us going to Disney World tomorrow, I would be going to see it tonight. So
absolutely.
So I will be seeing it as soon as I get back. And, you know, hopefully it's as good as everybody says it is. Hopefully I'll go see it maybe at Alamo or Carasotes. Carasotes. What's the next Marvel movie?
Black Panther.
Early next year?
No, Black Panther, I think, is coming out in like a few weeks.
We do have a date for really in a couple weeks.
I want to say soon, yeah. I'm going to Google it right now.
I am very excited for Punisher, November 17th.
November 17th.
Don, thoughts? Punisher, excited?
I will check it out.
Yeah, I don't know. The Netflix stuff...
Forgive me, it's February 16th of next year.
I thought it was next year. I think we were done for this year with Marvel. But November 17th, Punisher. I can't wait to see it. That was my favorite part of Daredevil Season 2. That was the only stuff I really liked in Daredevil Series 2, Season 2. I was really worried when, you know, Marvel got a little bit scared with the whole Las Vegas massacre, which, understandable. I just didn't want them to completely bail on that.
Right.
So you recommend it? Highly recommend it?
I highly recommend going to see Thor. And I think that there are certain movies you know, you could maybe wait to get home to see. We saw Thor in the Dolby Theater. This is a movie that you want to see on a big screen with big sound. It's so good.
Speaking of big, convoluted sound.
Oh, boy.
We got like 7 minutes left. We're just going to let Don go because Don doesn't go too much. And we're going to let him talk about prog rock. Don...
You give me a huge topic like this and tell me I have 7 minutes. I don't know where to begin.
Well, technically, Don, you got a tight five. Then we got 2 minutes for the go home.
So what I know about prog rock is Queensryche and Rush and Dream Theater. Maybe I was confusing Dream Theater for Queensryche.
You're not wrong yet, so.
The Mr. Roboto people? Styx, maybe?
Sort of. They had some prog-ish elements.
And Warmer.
And everything that Iron Maiden's done since Matter of Life and Death.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is Iron Maiden were a bunch of prog fans playing punk at the beginning.
Yes, yes.
Well played. Well said.
No, but I mean, if you talk to like Steve Harris, he'll tell you that some of his biggest influences were guys like, you know, Chris Squire from Yes and John Entwistle from The Who. The Who's not really prog rock, but they had their operatic elements. You look at Bruce Dickinson, he gets a lot of his vocal stylings from Peter Hamill from Vandergraaff Generator. And, you know, like there's definitely that very British mindset of like, well, this is what the prog rock bands have done. We should try and shoehorn that into what we want to do.
Well, Don, for the layperson, how would you easily describe prog rock?
Wanky.
That's a fair description.
That's a fair description.
There's a lot of wanky prog. You know, you could sit there and listen to Dream Theater and you'd be like, yeah, this is too wanky for me. And I could completely understand people getting turned off by that. But the American rock scene was very much built on rhythm and blues, you know, and stuff like that. The English rock scene was built a lot, at least the progressive rock scene was built a lot off of European classical music forms. And it was basically a bunch of daring British musicians who didn't want to just do four on the floor. They just wanted to sit there and try and take rock and classical elements and fuse them together. And that's where you would get bands that would do, you know, multi-part suites and album side length songs and, you know, bring in orchestras, bring in synthesizers and try and, you know, build up that sound. Yeah. And to give you an example, like Rush themselves, I mean, Canadian, but still very much in that same mindset. Geddy Lee did an interview with Dan Rather the other week on Access TV, and he basically pointed out, like, what Rush wanted to do was be the smallest symphony orchestra. And that's very much what prog rock is. You get like between 3 and 6 people on stage trying to play something orchestral.
Does it fit into it? Would you consider it a subgenre of metal, or is it more just a different type of rock?
It's a different type of rock. I mean, there are a lot of prog metal bands. I mean, we talked about Queensryche. We talked about Dream Theater. Opeth is definitely in that same vein nowadays. You have bands like Porcupine Tree that had metal-ish elements and prog-ish elements. But there are plenty of prog bands that you would listen to and you would not say that they're metal. I don't think you would say that Yes is metal in it.
Yes, that's the one I was thinking of. Yes.
The easiest word, and we always forget it.
Yeah, I forget about them all the time. For me, prog was always a little too... I like shorter music. It hasn't been until I got older that I've appreciated the longer Iron Maiden stuff, but I grew up with punk rock. So, and I'm sorry, but Geddy Lee's voice just always, like, grated on me. So rough. And I don't dislike Rush again. Counterparts, I love that album. Nobody's Hero, one of my favorite songs ever.
By that point, his voice settled down and he stopped trying to hit the high notes.
Yeah,
like if you go back through Rush's catalog and you listen to Cygnus X1, he's really straining to hit the high notes. And I think at that point, he's like, I can't do that anymore.
And it's the greatest song ever written about AIDS.
Yeah, Nobody's Hero is a beautiful song.
Yeah. If you were to give us the top 5 prog albums that someone would listen to get into prog, what would they be?
Okay. So I'd pick one from each band that I think is, you know, would be important. I think from Yes, I would definitely recommend Close to the Edge. 3 songs, all killer, no filler. Really just like the high watermark for Yes's output, I think. Genesis, I definitely would have to put in there, especially their older stuff.
Confusion.
I'm going to go a little further back than Land of Confusion. I'm going to say A Trick of the Tail, which was the first album they did with Phil Collins as lead vocalist.
This is the world we live in. These are the hands we're given.
There are a lot of great prog moments and pop phase too. Like if you listen to the Usual Touch album, I'm just gonna let him go.
You just have to.
Keep going. I'm sorry, Genesis.
So Genesis, Trick of the Tail, which was the first album they did with Phil Collins as lead singer. He had been just the drummer before that. King Crimson, a band that I'm seeing in 2 weeks, who's still alive and kicking, probably the first prog rock band. If you don't count the Moody Blues anyway, I would say Crimson's such a weird band because they have so many different members and their output changed so much. I'm going to say, especially for you guys who are metal guys, I'm going to say Red is the album that you want to listen to for King Crimson. It was Kurt Cobain's favorite King Crimson album.
All right. I'll definitely check that out. We're at 3.
Okay. I'm going to go a little bit newer. I'm going to go with one of my all-time favorite bands, Marillion, who I've seen 26 times. I'm going to see them twice when they're in the Southeast. I'm going to visit my friend down in Florida. We're going to go see him in Orlando. We're going to go see him in Atlanta. Nice. I'm going to see their 1995 album, Afraid of Sunlight, is my favorite album by them. And I feel like if they had a real record label behind them, especially in the mid-90s, that album could have been so much bigger.
Finally, number 1, Don Becker.
Oh, I wasn't doing a top 5 thing. Okay, so if I have to pick one more prog album, I'm going to go completely in an opposite direction. I'm going to go with the weirdest thing I could think of. Van de Graaff Generator, Pawn Hearts.
Porn Hearts?
Pawn, like the chess piece.
Ah, not like pawned, like you've been pawned.
Right.
Pwned.
Pawned, like Pawn Pwned. Stars. That show Pwned. Where people go to the pawn shop.
What album?
Pawn Hearts.
Hambone is sitting here masterfully writing all this stuff down and downloading on Spotify.
To give you an idea, and the King Crimson stuff isn't on Spotify, but the rest of it is. But to give you an idea of how Van de Graaff Generator is, people have compared Peter Hamill's voice to Jimi Hendrix's guitar, both in terms of like range of tone and emotion. I mean, he can scream and he can sing gently, sometimes in the same song, sometimes in the same verse. But it's musically it's restrained chaos. It's organ, saxophone, drums. And that's the instrumentation. So it is very much not what you are used to in terms of prog rock. But I feel like it's something, it's one of those albums that people should hear.
Don, you've hit your limit. That's all you're allowed to talk about prog rock for the rest of the year. That's it. You're done. No more. Okay. No more prog rock. No more prog rock.
Gentle Giant, Frank Zappa.
I'm completely kidding. Don, if people want to learn more about prog rock, if people want to learn more about your awesomeness, how can they reach you?
You can find me on Twitter at I'm Don Becker. That's I am, not I am. Letter I, letter M. Mm-hmm. That's really probably going to be the best way to reach me. I have a website that I haven't touched in about 6 years, but every once in a while I'll put some album recommendations up at donbecker.org. But yeah, Twitter. Just find me on Twitter.
Don will be back when we cover our Survivor Series preview. Don is actually a genius when it comes to New Japan Pro Wrestling. We just have nothing to talk about this week, unless we want to talk about a couple wrestlers getting fired. I don't think we really need to do that right now. Nobody really cares about Darren Young or Summer Rae. Yeah.
But guys, power struggle tomorrow morning. Tanahashi versus Bushi.
Ooh.
That's going to be...
You wake up for that. You wake up for that at 3 a.m. I will be in bed. Hambone, how can they reach you?
You can find me at Twitter at Hambreaker. George.
Go ahead.
You can find me on Twitter at Hambreaker. I've been tweeting a lot lately. Tweet me, I'll tweet you back. Also, tweet on the street the new episode of Office of the General Counsel from Unwinnable, in which I'm the guest, has dropped this week. So definitely check that out as well.
I'll lick your boom boom down.
George.
I'll lick your boom boom down.
George.
Ooh. You can find me at cultofgeorge.com, where I blog regularly. Also, where you can find the Mai Tai Happy Hour and Mai Tai TV archives dating back to episode number 1. You can reach me at GLK Creative on Twitter. You can reach me at GLK Creative on Instagram. I am also GLK Creative. I still have one or two bookings left for weddings this year. I am always available. I am here for you. I love everybody. I will now leave it to Hambone to talk us out.
Everybody remember, be nice. Aloha.
Перебитые поломанные крылья серой болью всю душу свело.
And this is the world we live
George.
In. And these are the hands we're given. Use them to let's start trying to make it a place worth living in.